星空を眺めている一人きりの夜明けもたった一つの心悲しみに暮れないで君のため息なぬて春風に変えてやる日の当たる坂道を自転車で駆け上る君となるした思い出乗せてゆくよララララララ口ずさむ唇を染めてゆく君の見つけた幸せ花のように
Yo! J to the M to the B! Jack Manning Bancroft. So we're doing a spontaneous thought experiment here. But how are you going today in general?
We're just like moving. There's lots of moving pieces moving around in movement, and it's fun to start to grab some of them and be like, okay, what's going to be the stuff that's put into the ground and we're going to run around in what direction?
So we're in the middle of this vast ecosystem of various interconnected and related, you know, philanthropic groups and, you know, startups and like clever young things who are putting together this app or that platform, this new financial instrument or that valuation method. And we're trying to weave all these together in that kind of, you know, in striving towards some kind of relational economy, you know, that can sort of exist in a sort of parasitic form within the current system, but be there as a patent for a soft landing and a transition to something better, you know, down the track, you know, when supply chains become disrupted, when, you know, suddenly the climate change events, you know, that we see render all real estate uninsurable. Because what happens to real estate, you know, as an asset class, land, when real estate becomes uninsurable? You know, what happens to that asset? How can you still borrow against that as capital to play with your derivatives? That's not going to be an option. So there have to be whole new asset classes relating to land and communities and their movement on the land as we have to become more itinerant, all these kind of things. There's so many things down the track, you know, commodities where futures, you know, markets will change around these things. And, you know, so much stuff coming around down the track. And so, you know, it's good to have some patterns and some practices and communities and you know, different models of things in place already. So I guess thought experiment here is on something that's come out of our little think tanks here. Our kind of rule in the labs that we've sort of started laying down of how we spend money. What is money for, you know, in our spaces here. And this is what we're going to be yarning through. So we had that rule that's come up of that money should only be used to make or strengthen relationships. And of course, the fine print in there is, you know, relationships, including human and non-human relationships and more than human relationships, you know. And so in our Aboriginal view, you know, this is going to be, you know, you're Bundjalung, I'm like Uplitch man from Cape, and you're down south on the coast there, New South Wales. So, yeah, what does this mean for us? Thinking it through, what does that look like? Money only being spent on relationships, and we can see a clear ethic there of our spending, of our discretionary spending, at least. It could even direct how we do, you know, the grocery shopping and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. However, and here's what I want you to start riffing on, like. What about when you have to pay your electricity bill? What about you have to pay the rent? What about you have to, you know, all these other things? You know, that is it a tenuous link that it's like, well, I'm looking after my family, so I'm going to pay for all this coal to get burned? You know, here's where the problems start to come in. You know, there are spendings that you have to do that are compulsory, that they may not align with that ethic. So what other ethics need to come in there, and what do they look like? Yeah.
If you play the, I mean, there's a few different tree branches to sort of swing off, around that word relations, there's I've been obsessed in the last little bit about the power of the node in the network, like to really think about what is that space between each other in relations. And as you brought us in and talked about, you know, where we both come from, that's a relation node factorial or a way of being able to give us a sense of, okay, well, this is the value of an anchor point. We're from a place of land, and then we both have relations to species. And so they form then that ceremony in, which was the same challenge of what we looked at when we looked at the way the sustainability index is scored in the American financial market when we were over there. The lack of the ceremony in then means that part one, your context for understanding your direction of investing in relations is out of context. So it's abstracted. So it's informed by impulses. It's informed by desire lines that have been manipulated by stories that are not anchored to anything. They're just anchored in a movement of stuff. And so when we're anchored to a place and to species, it at least gives us some place to think about the ethics to make decisions from. And then I think the second part you mentioned was in the context was the emergent organizations, and like it's cool that we learn from what we've done and then we build differently. Like that's cool. Disruption is cool. Like it's we learn from this. We're gonna, you know, these social networks have done certain things and now it's the time for relational networks, and that's cool. You know, these like streaming services provided like heaps of jobs and movement and different opportunities for actors and storytellers that like never existed over a decade, and they boomed story to all these places and like and provided access in a way that like was not accessible for people couldn't. And now we're clogged, and now we need some like some health again, not just distraction, because it's
that's it. Well, the problem with disruption, you know, is like it gives rise to all this sort of massive startling growth in everything real fast. However, you know, how can you get regulation to keep pace with that? How can you get ethical standards to keep pace with such rapid change? You know?
Yeah, and the part, which just the last little bit I wanted to just come back from the first question around the relations have to be looped. So, and you mentioned, you know, the what happens if you have to pay for something today, which is urgent and critical and something for me. So it's about what are the relations stimulating?
Yep.
I think part of the question. So is money to stimulate relations, or a relations, like is money used for relations to help stimulate planetary health? You know, to stimulate human health and then planetary health. And if our they're part of our codification system. So when you bring us in and mention on Bunjalong, it makes me have to immediately think of that space and place, like just purely from perspective. So when I'm thinking about my time, which is I use some of my money value is my time, I'm putting that intention, and attention has then been directed to a place and a space. I think the relation's stimulating, and then also there's a question about how are we going to stimulate, like that's we can I can't see a world where it's just like build these like alternative like blah blahs and then just like shit on everybody else. Like we've got to stimulate. We have to stimulate the imagination, the energy, the potential
to
be healthier. So
that's Bruce, you've just said to me like the piece. It's like how are you regulated? to make sure that you're moving resources towards creating relationships. You know, you've said it right there. It's I'm Bundjalung, you know, so I'm within this ethic, that my whole identity, who I am, where and how I'm allowed to fucking behave is determined by that. But, you know, if you're going, well, I'm an effective altruist and, you know, so I'm thinking in terms of long-termism, you know, so that means I have to direct my altruistic efforts to help the earth and humans, our species. I got to direct these towards building a colony on Mars, you know, and, you know, running a whole heap of Bitcoin scams and alternative bloody cryptocurrencies in order to, you know, scam enough money out of people to be able to make that happen. You know, it's different. That's the difference between saying I'm Bundjalung and, well, I'm an effective altruist, or, you know, I'm a capitalist, or I'm an anti-capitalist. It's all of that stuff that doesn't do it. You know, these are ideologies, not ethics. Speaking of, we've got Josh Waters coming in. Gamilaroi complexity thinker who might be able to lend us some, some ideas on this topic. He was there, but Jack, Josh was there in the meeting when we started floating this idea, because we had to make a decision on spending. And so, you know, big fellow there, but Dean Sanders, you know, he suggested this as a way to make decisions about spending. It's like, is this going towards strengthening relationships, key relationships? You know, if it's not, then it's a no on the spend for airfares. If it's a yes, then yes on the spend. Yeah, so Josh, you just jump in whenever you like, butter. Josh usually listens first for a long time. So I guess we'll just keep rabbiting on until he's ready to talk. But you're muffled. We're recording this one. Yeah. Type in the chat there, because I can't edit this thing, bro. Yeah. I can't hear your voice, and it's annoying. That's worse than dead air. Like, it's bad air. See, there, I'm motivated right away by a non-relational economy.
He's on the way back from the bunyas, so he couldn't be speaking.
He's in bunyas. Yeah. So there you go. He's in good relation because he's coming back from ceremony
and being
on country there, like where all our ethics come from, is from that, you know, this big bunya ceremony, you know, multi-tribal meeting protocols for good embassy, an embassy we're making around the world. So he's just coming back from there, where they've been prepping up, you know, ceremony way, law way for the opening of our sister lab, the second Indigenous knowledge systems lab in the world, which is we're opening. They're opening it in Canada, Anishinaabe, Mob, Melanie Goodchild, bloody, in a couple of weeks. So they're prepping up for that big embassy to head over there and do that work. Ah. So,
well, if it's all,
yeah. And hang on. Yeah, he's just reminded us in the chat there. So the other part, Brother Dean's yarn there, putting that down, was also another ethic suggested was you can spend money on improving or towards improving the overall health of the system. You know, system being, you know, biocultural sort of systems. So it's, you know, human communities, but, you know, also, you know, in embedded relation with landscapes. You know, so how, you know, so I guess that would include money spent on transforming, you know, current ill health systems towards new ones, you know. So, yeah, improving relations, but also in improving systems health, land and community, you know. Yeah, human, non-human.
Man, you're not far off, you know, like it's just if the device that's driving the behavior is about leaving the land as healthy as possible, then you can be that altruist if you've got a and you can have multi-stack. I've always struggled with only ever like with being anchored just to being bungee line. Like I like having movement. I like playing with puppets. I like being able to be in different places and spaces. Mm. They're a piece of land to move to. Like,
yeah,
leaving that better than, and healthier than when you've been in it is something. But I think it's more just being in healthy relation. It doesn't have to be about you being the hero and dominant. Yeah. But like, did you learn? Did you listen? Were you in sync with that space and place? And
yeah. But you're also grounded from where you're from. Like, because, you know, doesn't matter where you go, you're always black and you're always Bundjalung and you always answer to that. It doesn't matter if you're in fucking Iceland, bros, you know, you still got to answer to the laws and protocols of your mob, you know, and that's the tricky part that comes in there too, you know. It's more than an ideology, you know, because I could be an anarchist and hanging out with the anarchists in the community and stuff like that. But then I might be on holidays in Mallorca and there's nothing holding me to those values of anarchism. You know, for a start, why am I in Mallorca and not in, what's it called? Catalonia, which is the home of anarchy right there. It's like, hey, no, he's choosing to go to Mallorca. He's having cocktails by the pool, that prick. He's like hanging out with policemen on holidays in the pool, you know. Yeah, it's different. I think that's the difference with being Indigenous. Is like, you know, you have to carry that everywhere with you. But I guess there's religious identities too. Like you always have to be Christian, eh? If you're Christian, you're always a Muslim. If you're Muslim,
yeah, I think it's also like one of the challenges we're facing. In finding a path to collaborate with each other and with other businesses
is
different versions of how deeply anchored people have become with their identity to a point where they're so fixed that they can't even listen to this space and find that translation together. So I think it's more like I'm Bundjalung and my dad's like not, you know, like, and I'm come from lots of different spaces and places and that's me. Like and all of it matters and all of it matters. And it's not a race to zero for me or to 50. Like it's all can enhance. And I think in this particular design challenge, like I think the part of the moment is, you know, the stake in the land, like the stake in a place, like that for billions of people who are displaced from where they would have originally been from.
What's the
move, you know, for every organization which is displaced from an anchored place to nature and hasn't come from it, what's their move? For every city
constructed
on rules which don't serve us for the next century, let's put it that way politely. So what is, I think that's where I'm like really fascinated in that question of like, where does the money sit? You know, if you're designing a network to be an alternative to what we've got and centering nature and trying to drive nature and the species there, and you want to build the Netflix of the land, or you want to build like a place, and you know, you can bank bio credits and trade in there.
But we're adhering to our Indigenous knowledge protocols in doing so, and that's the tricky part. So here's the challenge I want to float to you is what just came up there just casually with Islam there. This is a really important example, you know, because Islam, like Sharia law stuff, etc., it's like they can't do usury. So they're not supposed to do interest. But you look at the success, you know, a lot of countries, you know, so Islam's success in the financial system, in, you know, markets, in all the investments they're making around the world now, you know, from oil revenues and all this sort of stuff. So how are they succeeding in business if they're not allowed to mess around with interest? You know, how do you get a loan, personal loan there in Saudi Arabia? And, you know, so they've got this kind of workaround that, I don't know, what do you think about this? Where it's like, well, you can't charge interest. But I tell you what, you want to buy a car. I tell you what, my brother, I'll buy that car for you. I'll buy that car for you, and then you'll buy it back on me 3 years from now, okay, brother? But you know what? I like this car and that's worth heaps to me. So, you know, you paid 40,000 US for that car. But I want you to pay me back 60,000 US 3 years from now. Yeah, that's right. You can send me a little bit every week. You know what I mean? Like, so they're getting around it like that. So they're not charging interest, but in effect, they're still doing the same kind of system. And this is the same thing with, you know, the early Christians, you know, when they wanted to do interest, but they couldn't because of their religion. Then they were like, oh, bring in some of them Jews camped outside the city gates there. We won't let them in. You know, bring some of them in. They can do the usury for us. So then, you know, our hands are clean from the money. We can still get all the cash from it, but we haven't broken our ethic. I don't know. What do you think we need to do to avoid, like, you know, falling into those traps of just replicating the structures, but in another name with some kind of, you know, get out of jail free card for our ethics, you know, where we're, you know, basically still doing, you know, breaking our law, but, you know, just trying to do some clever legalese and language tricks around the side of it.
Well, I think identifying and identifying the frame of the movement of the marketplace of the community. So that's where I love Dunbar's work, to look at restrictions of behavior, to look at governance within different numbers.
Yeah.
What we've talked about with us onlys and us alls and us threes and us fives. And so I think being able to think about governance as having multi-layered capacity and multi-wavelengths. And again, our job is to find translation playgrounds between that. And there can be multiple modes of ethic to serve the different needs and interests of that community if it is, as Uncle Dean said, you know, proving the health of the system. Like that and that system, if it's anchored on the relations as the investment that we're looking to get to know each other and where we're from and the knowledge we hold, and we're looking to listen more than we're talking, we're not leading to try and manipulate at the start. And if I think the health of the system prize for us as a species is the health of the planet, like that has to be the health of the system, which is where it sinks back to our systems in the cleanest, simplistic kind of parallel. But yeah, I think that collab design work that we're doing, like it's a very different decision in a internally about where money moves, and we can have a level of purity to our ethic, which we can hold, you know, and there'll still be like gray areas where it's like, oh, actually we think that this thing is going to come to life in 3 years' time. So we think that the overall system's health. Yeah. We want to send Joshy to Canada, or like, you know, or JD to Canada because this will move, or that's probably the easier one. But if it's like, we want to send Josh or JD over to negotiate like a financial marketplace out of London, and we're not going to see any movement on that for 10 years, but we're going to send them back every year for a decade.
That comes into that ethic of, you know, you're spending money to ensure overall systems health.
Yep.
So it's usually a longer term investment, that one. You know?
But that's also time matters. So in the loop of your factorials, you can look at the number of people in a community, you can look at the time of what that behavior is going to input. And that's where I think the context and the frame have these positive loop returns back to the whatever we could come up with in words to fix our description of what the behavior should be. And then we keep to the time, to the space, to the context, back to the past, to the day, to the future. Then you have a chance, I think, to move systemically in relation. And then when you bounce out of relation, that you can catch each other and be like, oh, yeah, I don't want to behave like that.
But that's the leap of faith. You know, moving straight into a relation, like relational economies, you know, there needs to be a pretty critical mass of people all doing that at once and all taking the same leap of faith. You know, because if you're like, you know, you think everyone's going to do it and you leap and you're like, yeah, we're streaking, we're all doing it, you know, and then you find yourself, you're the only one running naked down the road and there's flashing lights and sirens. You know what I mean? Like it's a big leap of faith. So moving into a relational economy from one that's just about self-interest, that's pretty freaking hard, man.
Well, I think
how do you do that? How do you start making an investment which is not benefiting you in the short term? Because in our way, like, you know, so our understanding of biology is different, you know, from the Western understanding of it, because they have a whole heap of transactions going on in biological economies, you know, between predator and prey, you know, parasite and host, where they are two things interacting in a vacuum. There is an exchange, and there's a winner and a loser. You know, it's a zero sum exchange, and that is an economy, a zero sum game economy mapped onto biological systems. Whereas you and I and Joshy, who's doing his listening thing and chucking notes up for us to go on, you know, we understand that differently as Indigenous people. You know, we understand that each exchange between two entities in a system is nothing. You know, that's not just an exchange between two things. And it doesn't really matter who comes out on top, whether it's the predator or the prey, the parasite or the host, you know, or two things in conflict. But because there's heaps of other relations in between them and all around them. So the system itself is benefiting from whatever the outcome is of that exchange, because those two entities are in relation, you know. So there are other things. There are many things that are fed if one of those entities loses. You know, there are, you know, many things that happen. There are many signals that are given off that signal other things to start moving, different communications, the ways trees are extracting their nutrients in that time period, then, you know, after that event has occurred between those two animals, or that animal and that plant, or that human and that animal. Right there are bigger relational benefits that go right through the system, and the benefits of these may not be seen in that system for a while. You know, it might take a long time before that fire, those seeds, that dead possum, you know, before we see that yield a really healthy sapling down the track. That might, you know, that will, in longer term, because that started in the right place, that might become a big old parent tree that cares for that place as well. So we see this as Indigenous people, but how can we see that and have people, you know, take all the things that they've taken so much risk and care to develop and accrue and accumulate over time through zero-sum game relations? How do they make that goddamn leap of faith and risk, you know, expanding their own precarity in a really precarious system, you know, by taking that leap of faith into a relational economy? How do you do that? How do you create the conditions for people to do that safely?
Because
you make that leap. You've like thrown it all out there, and, you know, you've thrown the dice. You've rolled the dice. And now what?
Yeah, I think you're like, if there wasn't so much on the line at the moment with planetary health, it'd be a very different context. So there's a third player, which is a planetary economy, which has emerged at a rapid rate of our need to then suddenly go, oh crap, like if we want to keep having human life here
for
a period of time, we got to shift our behavior. So that's the context. That's the broader context, which means that when I think about like being in relation, it's just that our current economic movement is not in relation because of what you described and a bunch of other contexts of what we inherited. I'm just excluding that much of other human beings from any level of a share in the intelligence design, budgets, the different playgrounds. So I think the ones and zeros can still exist, the coins can still exist, the dollars can still move around. But it's a really like powerful question, which is like, where does it input in the design queue of human relations with each other and then into that playground with nature, and where do we deposit it? And you know, I can see a world where like I can totally see a world where there are Netflix's versions of that, which are the nature playgrounds. And when you're like making a feature film in our generation and beyond, you're like, cool, I want 50% of this to be like the IP of this to be going back to these species. Like, there's a campaign done called The Lion Share not long ago to look at getting billables in film and advertising going back to lion preservation. Now, that's just about preservation, which is good, but in terms of acknowledging the IP and the relations that we have with nature and what we can learn, like, I think that's this huge emerging economy. Like, what can we learn from nature? And, we put to universities, and if unis in their current model, like, find a way to exist again and keep going, cool. If others stumble, then maybe they get replaced by us having a relationship with different species. Maybe universities, or the universities mold and they focus on, learning through the bee, and the bee's the professor, and we have relationships there. And I think that's a move, but it's just, how do you move it to a place where
that's it?
People can still make their money, but they're gambling on something that's in context, not something that's out of context.
Yeah. But that's it exactly. So all the stuff, like, what we deal in a lot is the why, and you hear this all the time. Every pitch deck for every new startup that's going to do a different kind of collective, a different kind of commons, a different kind of, relational economy, a different kind of investment. You see this all the time, that they, most of the pitch is the why. Still trying to figure out the how. We finish up with a situation like you and I found ourselves in earlier on today. Like, we're sitting and we're looking at an entire like platform and corporate structure and this amazing raft of innovative financial instruments and ways of especially. And dealing with knowledge as capital, and that in an investment in land, that the land has the controlling stake there in the thing that we set up. So it's like 51%, so it has the controlling stake. But then we run into problems. For example, we run into the problem of, hey, all right, well, this is mirroring a currently existing derivatives. Bloody structure, a kind of derivatives, process that's already in use, a strategy for derivatives trading that's already there. We replaced a few things. Then we look at it and we start going, okay, hang on a sec. Let's look at how value is being created here. What's the resource? Well, the resource is knowledge. So what is the capital in the end? Is the capital still the land? And then we've got to think it through. Okay, how is value being created here? So the land, like the people in the land and the people who are working, doing the labor there, they're involved in knowledge production. So there's knowledge in the land, and we're giving that status as an item of value, But in the end, that's a primary resource. That primary resource is land-based knowledge. So that's what we find there. And then, so in the system we're interacting with, the system of capitalism, what happens then to that resource? Well, value must be added. There must be value added. And that value is added with labor. And the cost of the labor needs to be way lower than the value that's produced by the effect of that labor on that resource. So we end up with a secondary resource, which is not knowledge production, but knowledge transmission. So you're creating some form of media, or communication that is translating and transmitting that land-based knowledge, the knowledge that belongs to the land. So then what happens? How do you compensate the people who are doing that work? How do you compensate the people of the land for their labor, for their knowledge labor there? So then we start to run into a whole heap of issues there. you know, of the structure of free market economies, and the fact that we can't get away from capital, and that, you know, in the system we're interacting with, the capital is still land. 2/3 of the world's capital is land, and that's the thing that you use to secure freaking loans, you know, and then you gamble, you know, in this, in bloody land-based knowledge futures, you know, with money that you've borrowed, you know, against the capital of that land anyway. So we're still doing the same freaking thing, you know, in a way there. We're setting up all these things and all these good relationships and these networks of relations for a relational economy. It's not there yet. What's the missing piece? What's the third heat?
Yeah, if you go up, you know how Buckminster Fuller wanted to put a dome over New York?
Yeah.
So he wanted to, yeah, dome the whole city, and then he thought he could create like a much more efficient energy usage, and then basically, you know, playing with that biodome world, like had it all as a container, had the humidity that would run down and that would feed the water system, all this other stuff. And, you know, there's
models. System.
Yeah, earthquake that have been built like in similar principles, and the geodesic dome like as a frame. And so what I like about the internet and what I'm excited about is that at the moment we measure, well, like we've measured our economies on flat, what's flat on the ground, like, and what we can build on top of it or what we can take from underneath it. What the dome gives us is a chance, like with, you know, looking at realms and looking at the specific health of an ecosystem, you can have attention and intention to all the other species, and you can document that, and you can be looking at the bioregional health of a realm, of a location, and that's real. So the relational health with the other species and the benefits of our time, like, they've got the healthcare system that gives you rebates for forest bathing. There's other versions of this around the world where, you know, you've got it on the ledger, and that's the key. The key, this has to relate to what we've got already, and it has to just be seen as a healthier way of living. I think, in parallel, this justifies health. So therefore, you know, the wealth should go to where the health is, and the wealth, the current rules of the game, the wealth has gone to the health of not enough of an ecosystem view, because we haven't. Mm. About the domes. Now, the second part of the dome is, like, what I think our chance is here is we need a dome around a home. We need a dome around a street. We need a dome around a city. We need a dome around a school. We need a dome around a business. We need a dome around a state. We need a dome around a country. And we need all of this working together on looking at our bioregional health, our health with non-human species. And that we can improve, the way we improve our relations with each other is actually by being in relation with non-human species. Mm. It's not by sitting down to negotiate with a person who looks different to you. It's by spending time with other species will soften us and open our imaginations, then move and have a different way of coming at that approach and looking out.
The thing we need to look at in that, though, is how do we make sure we don't make the same mistake that just replicates the disaster of biodiversity offsets, you know, because how that's working has worked and then failed in the past as people are investing in biodiversity sinks. Mm-hmm. Now, these biodiversity sinks are, you know, an illusion of a closed system, you know, so they're saying, well, it's this area of land here, this real estate, you know, we're giving that back to nature. This is a, you know, a closed system, and the biodiversity can stay in there. And we can measure the growth of biodiversity there, and that's how we get our returns, you know, within the growth-based economic system. So this idea of domes, realms, these sorts of things, if we're not mapping and tracking the flows of migratory species, of moving country that moves, of migrating ecosystems, you know, within and beyond and between, you know, and across all of these interconnected bioregions. If we're not valuing those flows and tracking somehow those flows over a deeper sense of time rather than a quarterly report, then you haven't got a stable investment. But what was interesting in our yarn earlier today was when we were trying to, because, you know, this is in Aboriginal science, but then also the scientific method. You know, you look for ways to disprove your hypothesis as well. Like you test the holes in something. You know, if someone comes up and makes a claim, they've seen a one-legged crow, and so now they think someone's definitely dead, then everybody's got to think about that together and you know, and test their questions and what other things have been seen around the place, you know. So it's the same kind of method of inquiry. And so there we are, and we're going, so what we start to do is imagine ways that we game that system. Okay, how could we short how could we short magpie goose futures, you know, when they all migrate south, when the season's done there in that swamp and they're migrating to other wetlands south, you know, in their annual cycles? How can you, if you have specialist knowledge as an Aboriginal person of seasonal flows, then you're thinking, holy shit, how can we game this marketplace? How do we hack this in a way that we can, you know, become millionaires overnight, billionaires overnight by shorting these things, because we have insider trading knowledge, you know, of where things are going to go, what trends are going to happen, you know. And then, I don't know, but then you start to think, well, beyond that, you know, how long is it going to be before people are doing large-scale interventions, like tricky, informed by complexity interventions in landscapes in order to trigger a series of events, you know, that will produce a future desired outcome of a species being wiped out, or a species moving, or a species behaving in a certain way that's going to cash out for you down the track. But most of the scenarios we came up with, it's like the land won out in the end. You know, if people were, you know, anticipating you know, different flows in the landscape and sort of betting against that landscape or that species, or betting with them, then barring somebody trying to intervene in the system, it was like no matter who was the winner or loser in trading, that the land was always the winner in most of the scenarios we're thinking about. You know what I mean? So yeah, that majority shareholder of that land, that bioregion, that they're in the end, they're the winner, no matter who's shorting and who's who's doing a bloody, you know, a run on this one or a run on that one. This biodiversity sink, that biodiversity sink. The problem, though, it comes down to how do you make sure these systems are interconnected and that you're measuring flows between systems and not just one dome, and therefore creating an artificially creating an entropic sort of enclosed system, which is death, which is, you know, national parks, you know, state forest, you know, biodiversity sinks. Yeah, bros.
Yeah, you do it. I think you do it with embassy, and you do it with trade. You trade. So the domes, if you think of Bucky's dome, the cool thing about the internet is it's not fixed, and so the dome can be a satellite. You can flip it upside down. You can turn it in different areas, and if you put like a green dome over New York, then inside it can be a bunch of like multicolored domes over different cities or different streets and like 49th streets, whatever. Different buildings, different homes, and then those domes can grow and go out across rivers. They can go across oceans, and a dome in New York can be in relation with a dome in Deakin Uni, you know, like which you've got happening at the moment. There can be these trading routes, and within that ecosystem, the health of your land is like has got to do with the health of my land, which is where I've always wanted to make sure that like. But if I just don't want to live in a little Nirvana spot, like for my land, because I want your land to be healthy too. And I think if the health of your land is healthy, then I think that you're trying to break the, not completely break it. I think you still have space for a nation state in its modern form, for states, for counties. But you're trying to build this interrelation, regenerative ecosystem embassy. So you might have in that shareholder route, okay, I have like I get 50% of my land, but then you might UNC five it, like, you know, 50% of the land region goes here, but it's also predicated on my relationship with this desert in Poland, with my relationship with this lake in Tebe, with my relationship through, you know, and Turtle Island, and my relationship through in Canada. And that's your governance model. That's how you give it a chance to see the joy of being together through difference, not protecting.
Like, it has to be, but that has to be built into the affordances, you know, of the tools that you design. So, I mean, I think that piece is partially, we've got that piece covered in a relationship with Ethic Investing, Johnny Mayer there, where it's working out how to create, you know, systems of investment where portfolios are interdependent, you know, so the health of your portfolio depends on the health of the next fellow's portfolio as well. So you're not in competition with them, that you need to ensure the health of his portfolio in order to ensure the health of yours. If he's investing in this realm over here, you know, where those magpie geese are migrating from, you know, then you need to make sure that his portfolio is healthy there too. That dome, that place, that swamp there, you need to make sure that his swamp is healthy. Otherwise, when it comes around time, those magpie geese aren't gonna, you know, migrate back around in annual cycles to your place and ensure the biodiversity continues there. You know, so it's kind of like, well, the biodiversity in your region in terms of numbers, if that's what you're following, that's going to spike in that season there in the swamp, in your swamp or your lake. That's going to spike. But you've got to be happy to let that go and watch, you know, and watch your numbers decrease for a bit while they flow on over to this other fella's one, you know. Or you could send a whole heap of people over to his place to shoot those. shoot all the magpie geese, but you know that's going to happen, so you short him and take over his portfolio. The problem with that is next year yours is going to take a dive, but then I guess you could also sell out at the top, you know, before that crashes, and then when the magpie geese don't come around the following year, and then that one, you know, you've sold out at the top. So then the value of that one crashes, and then you buy it back for cents in the dollar, and then you steal some magpie geese from somewhere else and try to repopulate it. It's just, you know, there are problems. There are problems that need to be overcome in this. You know, we need to think about all the scenarios happening, you know, because you've got to have mechanisms in place. And they can't just be regulatory mechanisms, because these have to be run by people within governments that are unstable. You know, they're unstable in the long term. And in an era of the rise of fascism globally, where people are trying to get rid of all the regulatory mechanisms and government departments that are perennial, no matter who's in power, and that ensure the health and well-being of the whole system and the society and the land and everything else, you know, these things would be removed. So you've got to have, if you're putting together an alternative financial system, you've got to somehow figure out how you're going to make that self-regulating. In the same way that biocultural systems are self-regulating, brother. You know, so how do you do the biomimicry in complexity to ensure that your financial systems are, you know, as self-organizing and not manipulable, you know, in ways that are going to maintain that economic homeostasis over time? These are the questions, brother. It's like when you solve one piece, there's another piece that moves.
Yeah, and having that, like being able to identify some part of it, you know, I think like in the still reach for the systemic playground in the biggest possible way, and then looking at what within the variety of different rules that are available, can you create healthiest possible shift in the trading routes? And one of the examples might be, like, you know, very, very simply, there's, I think we might have spoken about this last time, but there's the IP connected to plant breeders' rights. If you breed two different species together, you get IP from that piece. So for that person who bred that, there's an incentive for them, and they can have enough money to eat in the current way that a lot of people live. And so you're like, okay, cool. That's an incentive. for the Indigenous, if one of the groups that we know pretty well was like talking about, can we get for native plants, can we get Indigenous like breeders' rights, and can we have access to those native plants, and can we have an access to the funds? Now, playing that thought experiment out, where it gets really interesting is there is then an incentive for for groups getting native title funding, for land councils to go, hang on a minute, we could make more money from having native plants here, because we're going to, one, get a revenue fund coming back from IP, from everyone that buys this externally. But secondarily, we're going to buy a regional credit. So the health of the region is actually going to give us more money than we would have got on a rental property, and we can live in a place. So it's how do you move micro elements of trade that already exist and tilt them a little bit? And there's like 20 to 30 of those things which are possible that then end up a healthier place than, because if it's just do the magpies exist, or does the platypus or the whale exist, then you do, like, it's not complex, it doesn't have enough of the complexity of the actual value of what they bring. And when it's about the ecosystem value and all of the benefits and the health and all those things that come from it, and the richness of the soil, et cetera, oxygen, carbon sink, sweat, right? So it was a ball game, you know. And then the trade can move, I think, in those playgrounds. And you know, I think the window of the opportunity that's presented in front of us here is there is a chance that we can, with a combination of our best collective insight into our role as a species, with the soul of what, which is, we know, like you can feel it in your total bones and skin, that we're meant to be in relation with other species and with the natural world. And you can feel it looking at us in different places. And so there's a question of, can we live with the technological advancements and the different things that we've made in these ways? And can we tilt at the very least like $750 billion, but ideally a bunch more, towards marketplaces that see the health of nature as, and can we do that yet? And that's, that tilting, like enough of those tilts moves can lead to a healthier form of how we organize what business is. And that's what we're seeing that's coming through with. And then the next part is we define like the rules of value based on our necessity for survival, and then our desires and our
And
survival.
that's never enough. Survival instinct is never enough to drive innovation, you
No.
know. So there's competition, which is the current model, but then there's I think relation is also a really powerful motivator, you know. It's
Yeah.
funny, like you know, the things that I put my time into, they're seldom the things, even though I really need money, but they're seldom the things that are going to bring the money into me. It's like, you know, can I make kin with these people? Or like, have I made kin with these people? And then I have, and then it's, well, I'm obligated now, you know. So I'm in that. Here's the thing, though. There are a million startups who are grappling with this problem, and there are heaps of angel investors out there who want to throw some money into these things and see how they go, and see what kind of innovations are produced, you know, to create these new instruments. That are going to find, you know, market solutions, or, you know, alternative markets, alternative instruments, all these kinds of things. So, you know, there's a lot of angel investors like throwing money around and seeing where it lands, you know, into that many startups who are doing exactly the same thing that we're doing. My recommendation for those investors, what they need to look at is, how are those startups in relation themselves?
Yep.
Are they the startup that's looking for the solution so that they can become the biodiversity Microsoft and dominate? You know what I mean? So that they can be something that's going to grow enough to have an IPO, to have a, you know what I mean? You know, where people who got in on the ground are going to make out like bandits. Is that what they're doing?
They
You
have a
know, are they doing a, you know, zero sum exchange relation with the system? I'd recommend for anybody investing in this stuff that they need to look for the ones doing like what you're doing, which is about, you know, creating a whole ecosystem with distributed benefit, you know, like what you're doing, you know, with AIM and all of the, you know, projects that you've got setting up. You're distributing, you know, all the money you've got coming in, you're distributing it out to all these different projects everywhere. Without asking for anything in return. But what you build there is a network of relations, you know, that actually distributes risk, distributes benefit, all of these things. But it also means that innovation can work better. Innovation can work in the complex systems ways that natural systems create knowledge, produce knowledge, you know, that we can build upon. This is the thing, Buddha, you know, because no single one of the nodes in our network of relations here has the answers. You know, so we've got two Indigenous Knowledge Systems Labs. We've got the Indigenous Systems Knowledge Collective. You know, we're coming into relation with Indigenous Commons, you know, and we've got, you know, Ethic Investing. We've got 1,000 other different investors coming in, you know, through a whole heap of different projects there. You've got Guardians of the Earth, you know, coming with a massive piece of that infrastructure, you know, and then also the bodies that are the entities that are coming in out of that, Big Tiny, all these ones all have, you know, innovations that they're working on that are part of the puzzle. You know, everyone's working on different piece, but when we're working on it in adaptive relation together, you know, then these things can develop into, you know, big, healthy, interdependent systems that can actually grow the alternative, and that does provide the safety net then for the leap of faith that has to be taken. But you've made all these relationships, grown them, and then you've just leapt.
Yeah, the death date.
You've leapt.
Yeah, I think having that death was a lever for us for governance, just to go, it allowed systemically be in relation and declare we're in relation with every other organization. And
you've given it a decade. Yeah. You get them in a decade for the intentional death of the thing that you're doing. And then that gets composted back through the whole system, and all of the little projects that you've created and supported, you know, all your workers, all their labor, all the families and kin attached to all these workers, and the humans and non-humans of their places. These are distributed then as seeds throughout that big network. You know, these different entities throughout the network, you know, pick up those people. And so, you know, they have security in that way. That's if you can make it happen within 10 years. You might intend to die in 10 years, bros, but what if you die in 2? That's the thing. You've been taking this leap. And the leap of faith, like you gambled a lot, you rolled it. It's a bit like gambling on Wall Street, you know. So you must know something. You must know something as a black fellow that gives you some foreknowledge that the relationships are there, that the system is, you know, dormant there under that soil where the fire has just gone through, and that sprouts will come, or are sprouting already.
Yeah, I think that we were. I was yarning with Steph, who's one of our team, you know, during the week, and she said, you know, and we were talking back and forth and sense making on hope, and she said, no one gets to kill hope.
Yeah.
As I followed that thought, it stayed with me for a couple of days. I'm like, actually, same as, you know, us thinking, you know, I own the platypus, or like, no one gets to kill hope because it's too big an idea for a human being to hold. We don't get to kill it. We don't get to say it exists or it doesn't. Like, it's there. It doesn't exist because it's this energy current that is everywhere, and we can tap into it. And despair is everywhere, and we have these energy like currents that move around for us to be able to tune into and find. And if you go, like, you know, there'll be life on the planet until like 6 billion years, when the sun eats the earth, and there'll be life in the universe. And where there's life, there's hope. And for anyone that's like out pandering collapse, like visions and saying the end of hope, like is here and it's time just for complete collapse, then what is the actual, so the question's not what is the point of being alive. You don't even get to have that question because you are alive. But what's the crazy, crazy, crazy way of being out of relation? Because hope is in relation. Hope is life. Like, and so for this moment, like, yeah, there's all this stuff that's attacking that essence of our capacity to see each other. And the potential in the window, I think, in terms of back to where we started the conversation, to finally land in like a really simple decision making you might make when making your budget or thinking about your allocation of your time. Like, you know, we've given two weeks this year to our team for nature weeks to be in touch with nature so far. And it's been the easiest management decision of my life. Everyone comes back smarter, centered, better health, like and better perspective. Like when we look at our investment of our budgets to do this with 1,000 startups, we just got back from Berkeley and got to carve out the time to be an embassy together because the speed of everything has moved 100x and we've got to be able to force multiply that to protect our ability to be in relation because we actually still have the skills and the knowledge. We have a bit more, but we've got to carve.
But it's not just 2 weeks like cultural leave. You know, that a lot of institutions are doing, you know, that's not the only 2 weeks your employees are spending in nature, like while they're on the clock, because, you know, where's their office? You know, your staff is in bloody, you know, moving between continents all the time, making embassy all the time, is, you know, moving in nature all the time as well. You know, you're not just in indoor environments, you're moving through and with land and in between. The embassy piece is important, bros. It really is. Yeah, and I wanted to do a call back to our yarn the other night. You know, I was talking about how, like, you know, my whole life and particularly my career as a writer and thinker has been around, like, quite a way of dealing with and living within a world without hope. You know what I mean? And what you can do instead of hope. But then, like I was telling you, you know, you red pilled me on hope. You radicalized me into, you know, having not just hope, but actual kind of a bit of genuine excitement for the future, which, you know, I probably won't sell any books now that I'm doing that because nobody wants to hear that, Jack.
Sorry, publisher.
Yeah. No one wants to doom scroll through a book about how awesome everything's going to be soon. Don't get you an audience. So anyway, thank you for that. But also, damn you for ruining my career. But so anyway, I guess if we're wrapping up now, we're just trying to think about what are these principles just as like general values towards money. As we're all moving together in these ecosystems of slowly developing, you know, a safety net and a system of supply chains and trade and embassy, like, you know, interrelational economy, which is stretching all around the world. We got people on every continent, bros, you know, and it's moving through. What's our values around money in the meantime? You know, because we're living in the economy, and we laughed around the early part with that idea about rendering unto Caesar the things that be Caesar's, you know, because you have to do that. But the values, you know, we started out this yarn with that one value of, okay, the big question you ask before you spend any money is, you know, is this making good relation or improving or strengthening relation? You know, with humans, non-humans, with a system, within a system, between systems, all this sort of thing. Is this money in service of relation, of kin making? You know, that's the one we started out from. And then Josh, when he came in briefly, but a bad reception, But really important contribution, you know, he said, no, there was that other part too, which is, you know, your use of money needs to be devoted towards promoting systems health. So the relations, you know, are an important part of that, but there's a lot more in terms of systems health, not just relations. You need to make sure the systems that you're creating, you know, the systems of exchange are mimicking, have precedent in the pattern of the natural systems that they're impacting. Otherwise, there's going to be problems. All the little scenarios in our thought experiment today, we've been thinking about how people might short the system, how people might sabotage the system in order to get the jump on futures so they can do a bit of insider trading and make a killing, you know, literally make a killing. Yeah, in the marketplace, but then also that's going to kill the system there as well, because those magpie goose don't come back around next year. So there's that one. But then there's this other piece. You're yarning and I'm writing down principles coming out. There's also these investments can't be separating land out into like, you know, places. Okay, we'll fence this one off. This is for nature, you know, because humans need to be embedded. Wow. We have an ecological niche in there and the land is sick without us. So these things have to be about, these investments have to be about returning people to land in custodial relation. Because one of the big colonizing effects of biodiversity offsets and creating biodiversity sinks is that they're removing Indigenous people from that land. That's happening everywhere, you know. So they're removing Indigenous people from the land to create this bloody nature reserve. And then they're like hiring a few of those people for a few bucks an hour to commute in and look after that land. No, can't be like that. You know, in places where there are no people and you want to improve the biodiversity of that, the labor that is value adding to your nature investment cannot be done by workers who have to commute. The labor must be done as human beings who are embedded in the system and are part of the system, because that's the system then working for itself, you know. So there has to be a piece where, you know, in every investment, there has to be a piece where it's returning people to the land and in good relation to the land. And that brings me to this last one I want to propose out of there is ceremony. You know, ceremony is how all this happens. Connecting up these systems and sharing feedback about the systems that are interconnected. This has to be done in good embassy with good embassy protocols between people, the people of the land, you know, across vast distances and globally. And we can't have that embassy without ceremony. So you've got to have your ceremony there in that place that is keeping you honest. Ceremony keeps you honest. You know, ceremony is the thing where all of the protocols, all of the ethics that we're talking about, you know, for money, for anything else, ceremony is where that's held. You know, and then when you do ceremony with others, you know, for gatherings that are for multiple bioregions and multiple groups, multiple people of the land, like groups, you know, ceremony's the thing. Ceremony's the thing that facilitates that dialogue and that trade. Cause that knowledge of the land, that's gotta be happening. Not just as zeros and ones on a screen of different values shifting around in a marketplace, you know, with AI determining those algorithms, you know, there has to be that collective, there has to be that commons, you know, there has to be that embassy occurring. So there's that good embassy happening there. I don't know. So you got any thoughts to add to that? And then I'll tell you where I got to with the carving, the wood carvings that I've been doing in relation with all these people we're sitting with. Where I got to with that that piece around embassy for all this money work.
Yeah, I think the investment tilt is to shift at the start of the design queue some principles like you've drawn out there, and if you follow that principle of us being in the land, that those bioregional places, every national park around the world. Then if you want to pick a number, you pick a Dunbar number of 150 Indigenous people get access to be in custodians, gets a return, their full access to living in custodianship with that land. And that becomes the exchange. And then there's the next stack that starts to become interesting from there in terms of a trading route. If we're meant to be in the land, then everybody else who doesn't know how to be in the land go to trade with the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Labs, not just to visit the national park, but actually to come have a residency and to be in residence, which I mentioned last time, you know, pay 10 grand a week, like, and the United Nations then decentralizes like different gatherings and says this UN gathering or this great gathering of politicians is going to be in these different based spaces. So you create training from knowledge to move. And so every politician in Australian federal government and every politician in New South Wales government, you want to sign like a pathway to nature, look at your time and being in the land. Just that simple piece. And yes, like it's not going to be everywhere all the time for some of these structures in it, but to get 2 weeks a year where you're going to Indigenous Knowledge Systems Labs in relation in a residency, they're going to be smarter. You know, they're going to be.
Bruz, that's 365 because it resolves that identity issue you raised at the start.
Yeah.
You know, when you're accountable, you're always accountable, you know, because you're Bundjalung. So you're accountable to that. But what the hell is an effective altruist or an anarchist or a libertarian or a communist? What are they accountable to as an ideology? We were saying that's a limitation of it. But if you're investing in the Sahara to protect a desert rat habitat, you know what I mean? And to be in relation with that. And yeah, you might visit that one and work with the land-based knowledge, you know, a couple of weeks a year or every now and then. You might send your children there for an internship with the desert people. But, you know, when you're introducing yourself, you're not like, hi, my name's Jeffrey and I'm a bloody libertarian, bloody economist. No. You're like, you know, I'm Jeffrey and I'm in relation with Sahara. You know, I belong to this this Sahara region is what I answer to. This region here. And I'm connected with the desert rat there. You know what I mean? Suddenly people have an identity, like a genuine identity that they can, you know, claim. And it's not an Indigenous identity, but it's coming along that idea of a naturalized species, something that's coming into relation with a place and not behaving like an invasive weed anymore. I think that's pretty deadly.
And it's where it goes from being seemingly impossible to going, no, that's just a learning and development budget that already exists in every government. We're already traveling.
Yeah.
Just reroute the flights. And then we've already got the land, reroute the positioning of some people as we have reroute the positioning of people in lots of ways. And then if you want to create units across the country, do what you did after the pandemic. Give like, you know, here's your $50 dine and wine voucher. Here's your $50 to go and like be in nature and or do what Japan's doing. We're going to clip, you know, $100 off your healthcare fees if you spend a week in nature.
Yeah.
Hey, cool.
Look out. You know, and what are you keeping in your safe? You know, that's what's exciting.
Mm.
You know, what's your bond? What's your, you know, the paper you're keeping there, is it even paper, you know, or are you keeping an object
or a
story from that you did an object that carries that story that you found in ceremony with the people of the land there, you know, where you were. That's your bond. That's the token that represents your investment. And, you know, it's a lifetime investment. That sounds pretty freaking cool. But how do we do the embassy? And these are the protocols that we're working on, because, you know, we know how we do our embassy in Australia, you know, through the regional ones, like the Bunyas protocols we have for meeting and making embassy, doing the big, you know, collective sense making that we do, ritually there, and our trade, which is made from making relations, marrying and adopting, strengthening relationships through trade. And that's what governs every exchange in our systems of trade. We know that we have that already, but it's not the same for all the people of the land all around the world. You know, we have commonalities, but these things are different. So we were thinking, what is the principle? What is the phenomenon, the substance? What is their entity? What is the story, that one story that we all have in common? What connects up every song line on the planet that you travel for trade? What connects every system on the planet together? That can be, you know, the governing entity, the governing natural phenomenon of land and sea and sky. What is that one thing that we all have story for, that we can come together in embassy for? How do we build our protocols? How do we build the law from that for embassy in this thing? And it came out, Russ. It's come out in this embassy with, you know, Ecuador mobs and African mobs and all this one. But also with the embassy that I've been doing with invasive weed species here in Australia and figuring out, okay, how do we do embassy with these weeds? How do we do embassy, like that quarantine that we have traditionally for trade, where it's not about stopping, eradicating, treating like contagion, like pest, like, you know, invasive thing. You know, what do? Well, we come into relation. You know, we make relation there, and then we have ceremony together, we have law together, and bring these species, you know, into the law of the land so that they're naturalized in, like the dingo, like the tamarind tree, all this stuff. Anyway, so that carving that I've been doing with the poplar, that white poplar, which is an invasive pest here that takes over waterways and poisons and removes and takes over everything, that invasive one. Yeah. So there's that bowl where the patterns came out that had the platypus in, that's linking all the economic stuff, that had crow, that had acacia. But then the other half of that stuff here is the shield. And so that carving that I've been doing here, that's where it's emerged. And in our yarns in the labs and in our yarns with the people that we're making embassy with all around the planet, that one law that links us all is water. We all have water story. And water is that commodity that is becoming, you know, rare as freshwater scarcity, freshwater insecurity becomes one of the main forces driving our future on the planet. And so then, of course, it drives the futures market, because water becomes, there's more demand as it becomes more scarce, and therefore it becomes a good thing to trade on with futures. You know, so you've got Wall Street buying up all the water rights to all our waterways, Murray-Darling Basin, going up to Queensland. All the water, fresh water in Australia is seized by a government and then sold on to others as assets in other countries. And then on Wall Street, they trade futures in that water into infinity in the derivatives market. This is what we need to create something different around. And so this is our story, bros. It's this water story, and you're from saltwater people, you know, and there's freshwater people, but everyone all around the planet, even in the Sahara with their underground water, you know, it's all there. That's always water story. And these are all those water spirits that come out through that, you know, and here's that weave coming in from the Amazon people who've sent us that pattern as well for water. That's the one going down the middle there. So, yeah, this is moving, bud. You know, we've got embassy happening. We have trade happening. You know, we have protocols developing, you know, beyond the sunset, sunrise, sunset dreaming, you know, on our continent of how we've done it forever, that law. You know, it's coming water, which is pretty good, because water is in land and skies and seas. It's that one story that binds us all together, because it's in our bodies too. Anyway, so that's where we're up to.
Yeah.
The collaborations we got going. I think it's coming, brother. I think we're going to catch you and all of us as we fall.
Perfect. Yeah, where there's water, where water is life, and where there's hope, there's life.
That's it. Well, they say leap and the net appears. Well, we don't need that net. You know, leap and we're jumping. There's good water there. Water there to break our fall. If this planetary system, this global economic system of extraction, if it's looking for a soft landing, you know, in the coming decades, well, they need to look to the water, I guess. All right. Well, that sounds like wisdom. Let's call that ancient indigenous wisdom for today, Bruce. And yeah,
I'm something. Is that what I'm going to do next?
Yeah, yeah. All right. Thanks, bud, for taking the time out.
All good.
Catch you soon. You know, catch you after.
That is.